From cradle to grave, every moment of your life is one word after another, overlapping all the words from all of those who've crossed your path in a never-ending cycle of tale and experience. The concept is simple. The guest chooses the theme, the coin is flipped, and the winner is the first to tell a story based on their chosen theme. The loser gets to share a second. There are no prizes, no contests, no rules, and no boundaries. Just a few minutes spent exchanging the narrative from moments of our own human existence. Welcome to Tell Me a Story. All right, so you've got a brand new piece of technology for this, correct?
I do.
This ought to go well.
Yeah, that's always a great way to start, right?
Yeah, you bet. Hey, we'll do a thing. I'll buy something I don't know how to use. So you got an Android tab?
Make it take two or three times longer than it needs to. That's what geeks do, you know? You know
yes,
that.
I do. I remember. God, it must have been. It's almost 3 years, 4 years now. Fuck. When you and I were first trying to get the Left Show put together, we tried an awful lot of insane stuff.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, the way it's all rigged up now, I record on one computer. I use another computer as the Skype box that goes in and out of the board. And then had to get a headphone amplifier. So basically we were trying to do with computers, you and I, and the board itself was the missing component, because that didn't come until months later after we had given up. And then Forrest and I spent a couple of Saturdays in a row trying to figure out how to jimmy rig a telco switch so that we could take calls. And that was two wasted Saturdays, man, with every conceivable little piece of adapter technology ever made in a couple of cordless phones, and nothing worked. No. And then I had the blue snowball microphone. You remember that?
Oh yeah, I remember you brought that to Denver.
Yeah. So I had that, and then Forrest took one of these fancy Sennheisers to his house with this goofy little cord, and we recorded a Skype call back and forth, and he sounded better, even though I was recording here from his house. So we quit using the blue snowball. It's up on a shelf now. I don't think I've used it in
retired.
3 years. Yeah. No reason for it. I'll probably end up taking it to work to use for a couple of things there, because it still sounds great. It just doesn't sound this great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. All right. So
the quality of the Left Show and these Tell Me a Story episodes is amazing.
We've come a long way.
Sounds like a professional operation.
Well, by golly, it is.
Exactly.
No, we honestly, it was our first four or five shows. We were using a lot of old band equipment, and it was like the mics were blown and the cables were shit, and it was just pretty rough. And Forrest, bless his heart, couldn't take the sound of it anymore, and so he bought three of these nice Sennheisers that are starting to. I can hear their age. But they're still better than anything else we've had. So, you know, they're not great. They're not perfect, but they do sound pretty good. And then I just go in post and fix all the sound so that it sounds a little more studio.
Sounds really good. I haven't listened to a whole episode for a long time, but I know that the last Left Show episode and then the last Tell Me a Story episode, they sound studio quality, so I'm impressed.
It's been a lot of hard work. And you would know because you work in a studio every day. Let me take a second and introduce you for those that may not be paying attention. Because just like Hole 322, for some reason, Tell Me a Story doesn't get a lot of crossover traffic from the Left Show. People are listening to it just to listen to it. I don't understand.
Really?
But, yeah.
So this is Jason Williams, an old dear friend of mine. I've known you since 2006, I believe.
I think so, and I've been reading your blog since 2004.
Oh, that old thing. My formerly award-winning blog that I don't believe I have touched in almost 6 months.
I know, it's sad. I put up three posts in 2013.
Ouch. They were good posts. So you are the owner of FozTech, a Northern Utah company.
That's right.
You do computers and networks and fancy things like that, correct?
Yeah, it that's what it says on the business license, at least.
And you are also I think the longest running host on For the People on KVNU.
I am. I inherited the show from founders Tom Grover and Ryan Yonk, who were also founders, this is going way back, of, co-founders of the Utah Blog Hive, which you'll remember.
They were involved in that? I thought that was Bradley.
It was Tom's idea. Tom suggested it to a friend of his who then made it happen. And I just found that out a few years ago. But, I inherited For the People from Tom when he went to law school in 2008. It was just going to be a temporary fun thing to do through the summer.
Yeah.
And here I am.
Because I know you get paid shitty.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's radio.
I'm always amazed that there are certain people who I won't name in this episode who have made a living on radio in Utah. I don't know how they do it.
Well, some people get paid well.
Sure.
You know, and Doug Wright is a guy who gets paid a shitload of money. You know, I have never, ever in my life thought that he deserves it, but, you know.
No.
His ratings say different. I mean,
say if you knew a person named Doug.
Sure. Hypothetical
who was on
Doug.
A radio show. You would sometimes wonder.
Good grief.
Why the bucks are coming that Doug person's way, but.
Yeah. I don't know. I know that KSL Television has, I mean, lost a lot of its luster over the years. I just don't. I don't look at the ratings enough to know how well Doug does. I know that that idiot show that replaced Sean Hannity, The Browser, actually gets better ratings than Sean Hannity ever got in that time slot, which blows my mind.
As much as I hate Hannity, that really surprises me.
Yeah. And if I don't know if you've ever listened to The Browser, it's very surprising. I mean, they seem like nice people, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, it's a radio show about the internet.
Yes, and not even the most interesting parts of the internet.
No, because you're not allowed to talk about Two Girls, One Cup on KSL.
Only the nice stuff.
Yeah. That's, so, over the last few years, you and I, we know each other, honestly, politically. But if there's one thing I think that you and I have been able to do, it's to chat with one another in an interesting fashion in which politics does not necessarily have to be the core topic.
Sure.
And if you were listening the other day, I don't know if you're all caught up. We just did the 175th episode of The Left Show.
I was amazed and I was saddened that I could not be a part of it.
And just, I will be mildly passive aggressive. Don't worry about it. I certainly don't give a shit. But don't get me wrong. When you add to a show, you are in addition to the show. You're not just noise. We have had segments on that show that have been just noise. Not naming names. So, but 175 shows, and we were talking about it, and JC mentioned that in his memory of the 175, his favorite memory was the 10 minutes you and I did at the Salt Palace in the Wendover wing. Because he's just, yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
When the state party gave you a spot at the convention.
Man.
For the show. Down the hall.
Yeah.
Second floor.
I know. You thought you wanted it that way. No, you didn't. You forgot. You either forgot.
It was funny, though. You drew the crowd. You were actually, you and your table and the Left Show's broadcast was actually drawing people off of the convention floor, out of the foyer, over to where we were, because that's where the fun was.
Up the escalator, down the hall, through the dungeon, past the labyrinth, riddled the Sphinx, and there we were.
If they could have put us with the Republicans, they would have.
I just don't think there was a connecting hallway. No, what my favorite thing about that, honestly, was is that we managed to score guests because we were on the way to the long walk to the less crowded restroom. And yeah. So people would come zipping by that we wanted to talk to. And we're like, hey, we want an interview. And they're like, in a minute. And they'd hurry past and then moments later would come slowly and more comfortably sauntering back and would happily sit and talk to us. But that's where you and I, and again, I'm going to yank us out of politics in a minute, but you and I met, I believe if I'm going to say her name wrong, Debbie Iyunga of the True Blue Party.
Yes.
And I noticed that you just barely, within the last week, became a member. I was like, what the hell? How's he not a member already?
I went through an anti-Facebook group phase that lasted about 2.5 years. So I would get invites all the time to that and a few others, and I couldn't hack it. And it wasn't, and this is no offense to the members. It's a flaw in me. I'm a troll.
Yeah.
I can't help it. I go to these groups, and I read things that I disagree with, and then I just poke people in the eye, and then there goes my entire night.
Well, I'm going to throw out the third nudge on your particular resume from me, and that is you are the genius that runs 95% of the Left Show's Twitter, and I always know when my phone starts beeping that Jason has started a pie fight on Twitter, and I just go and look and... Sometimes I cannot follow the convoluted logic of the dipshits that fight with you. I can't track it.
But I'm constantly torn with this type of thing. It's entertaining as hell. It really doesn't take that much of your time.
Nope.
But then at the same time, it can be quite a time waster.
Yes.
I think what perhaps maybe it's a childish part of me, maybe, I don't know. I think what gets me is that people on Twitter think they're saving the world or changing something important or that. No, you're just on Twitter, man. That's it.
You cannot make an in-depth coherent argument in less than 140 characters. And
yes.
The biggest problem with that is my favorite is when you manage to urinate inside the Cheerios of a lot of elected representatives in Utah.
And oh, they're so touchy.
They start 9 or 10 people will end up inside the argument. And so the only part of the messages that go forth are like 4 words long and they think they're making a point.
Sure.
And that's when I really start there'll be like 5 or 6 people, including 1 to 2 elected representatives. I mean, Todd Weiler, too easy, you know, to bait. But for the most part, yeah, there's a few of them in there that you'll type something and they'll lose their fucking minds. And I will pop up like the next day and I look at my at Tweetcaster and it says, you have 56 mentions. And there were no mentions when I went to bed. And so I have to go through and read it all and just laugh. And from time to time, I want to chime in, but I'm like, no, because I may not have read everything. So it is fun. I like that you do that. It's one of the reasons I really get no actual butthurt about the fact that you're in a bit of a burnout right now. With the angry finger pointing politics stuff.
It's been a long burnout too. One of the longest burnouts I've experienced with politics, which is one of the reasons I haven't written on the blog in a long time. I mean, one of the other reasons, honestly, is, you know, you do a 2 hour a day radio show,
yeah,
and you do kind of the things you have to say. This is what I've learned: the things you have to say, it's finite energy every day. And by the end of a 2 hour show, I've said and opined as much as I seem to have the energy for. And the idea of writing something more in depth is very appealing and I think important. I'm actually sad to see state blogs disappear as much as they have. I'm kind of sad. I'm glad to see that revival on the forefront again, a little bit at least. But
yeah, it's coming back, I believe, due to election result fear for this year's midterms.
Sure.
Yeah. It's, you know, we got the president we wanted. Well, most everybody did. I wanted Biden, you know, but still it was like, okay, big deep breath. Everything's going to be fine. And then it wasn't. And then it wasn't some more. And then it wasn't some more. And then you'd say something and, you know, the rank and file would be all, hey, shut up. He's our first black president. It's like, shut up. Surveillance stuff sucks. I don't like it. What? Guantanamo? Oh, come on. So you and I were talking the other day about why we haven't had what used to be batshit crazy and then became the sidetrack from you. It's just because you're sick of being pissed out loud. And I totally get it. For anybody that's listened to the Left Show for more than a year, we do a lot less politics than we used to.
Sure.
If it's insane enough to make me incredulous, yeah, we'll bring it up. But for the most part, fuck, I want to talk about movies. I want to talk about boobs. It's what I do.
You know, though, it you have to talk about what's interesting to you, what's passionate, and or what you can speak passionately about. And it's hard to maintain passion about politics. I mean, you brought up, you know, Barack Obama's election was kind of a turning point, I think, for a lot of the blogs, you know, the biggest blogs that you can name these days that are still around that got their start in the Bush years.
Yeah.
Primarily with the lead up to the invasion of Iraq.
TPM. And
they struggle.
Crooks and Liars.
Yeah.
Daily Kos.
They struggle a little bit themselves under Barack Obama's presidency to, you know, you saw them kind of wane a little bit. And then, of course, 2010, a bunch of nut jobs with a bunch of rich people funding them,
yeah,
take house, and then you see them come back, and I think that's kind of a natural back and forth. My biggest problem, you know, has been sort of the frustration. I spend my time either arguing with insane people,
yeah,
saying the stupidest shit you could think of to say about Barack Obama and defending him, and getting pissed off at fellow progressives who keep calling him a progressive. And I can't decide which one of those makes me more mad.
Honestly, so I find myself far more bitter when I have to stand up and defend someone who I feel has let me down. And
sure.
Obama is not a progressive. He's not even liberal for the most part. Everybody says it was a gaffe, but I think Joe Biden came out for gay marriage on purpose because he was sick of fucking around. So
yeah,
he just
did
it. He's just like, oh, screw it. You know, everybody's going to push for Hillary anyway. Bleh. And
yeah.
I was so proud of him at that moment. I'm just like, yeah. And then Obama's like, well, you know what? Old Joe there has a point. And I'm like, now that's the big fucking deal right there. Because
yeah.
we got a really shitty healthcare bill. You know, and parts of it are better. The no lifetime caps is fantastic. The no pre-existing condition bits, fantastic. However,
sure.
I've had real big boy insurance before, and it with the exception of the caps and the pre-existing condition stuff, my insurance now is worse than it was 5 years ago. And it drives me up a tree. Because
sure.
It was supposed to get better, and now instead it gets worse, it gets weird. But if you fight it long enough, they can't they can't say no about stuff. But it's, I mean, you know, I'm on Wellbutrin because I'm trying to quit smoking. And my insurance company denied it this month. I've been on it for 6 months. They denied it this month because they're like, well, it's a misdiagnosis. It's like, what? How do you figure? Well, we just figure the doctor didn't diagnose it right. Well, are you a doctor? No. Then who the fuck are you to say? You know, that's why I like, you know, not again, I'm going to steer us away from this. I swear to God. But, you know, I was a single payer guy. You're a single payer guy. We're all ready for Canadian healthcare. I have yet to meet a Canadian not given cash money by, you know, Adelson that will shit talk.
Oh, yeah.
Socialized
Canadian
healthcare.
Laughing at us right now.
Oh, yeah. I would, too.
Well, and I think that the healthcare bill, and maybe this is a good way to sum up the last, you know, 6 and what will eventually be 8 years of politics with Obama's White House, is the healthcare bill. The president has been really good at gauging the political climate and doing what is possible in that climate. What he hasn't been good at, and what you can see even his vice president being better at than him, is pushing the political climate, changing the political climate, instead of just reacting to it. And that's, I think most of us in 2008, by 2012, we were just voting for him because Republicans are assholes, right?
Yeah.
But in 2008, yeah. I think a lot of us thought that's who we were voting for.
Voting for Joe Biden.
Sure.
The best comparison I can make is Salt Lake City is a lot like what people think Denver is.
Yeah.
Yeah. With less beer. But no, it's, you know, and that's, you and I had that bitch, I think, for a while with Utah's only Democratic congressman, Jim Matheson, back when he was polling in the upper 70 percentile of popularity. And that was a great time for him to use that popularity to educate the electorate in what the real world is like, or he can run over there and say he doesn't like the gays and pretend that abortion's icky to him.
Sure.
And then Amia Love comes along, and the guy's hosed. He quit. And yeah. He didn't quit in a way that gave any Democratic advantage. He's going to quit at the end of his term because he's a selfish dick.
Matheson, for all of the lip service about him being, you know, just this very unique Utah kind of politician.
Law.
Bullshit. He's a politician, and he just happens to be a good politician. But he's the worst kind of politician. He's the kind of politician that is 100% politician.
Licks his finger, sticks it in the air.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he's smart. He knows what to do. And I know, you know, for him somehow, and we'll see what it is soon enough, but his timing of his retirement, his decision to retire now, will serve a purpose for him. He'll probably be smart in planning it. But it's the worst kind of politician, somebody that is just 100% a politician.
Yeah.
Sadly, that's the best that the Democrats in Utah have ever been able to get up there.
Yeah.
Which is a whole other show, right?
It is. Okay, so, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Jason Williams, tell me a story.
A story.
Someday I'm going to be able to say that without laughing.
I actually, we've touched on the story a little bit, but I was thinking about this the other day. All of the things that I've experienced with someone named J.M. Bell, and I was laughing because one of my first experiences with Jeff Bell. I realize this story is supposed to be about me since I'm the guest, but this is kind of about me.
No, it can be about anything.
One of my first experiences with you, Mr. Bell, was a couple of friends of mine and I loaded up one night to head to Salt Lake. We were going to go see Salt Lake City Mayor Rocky Anderson debate talk radio wing nut Sean Hannity.
God, I remember that.
We drove down, and as we're walking in, there's a man. There's Sean Hannity, first off, is standing there outside the theater, and then there's this man, a taller guy, with cool hairstyle. He's looking like he's there on purpose, with a purpose maybe, and he's having some sort of an interaction with Hannity that seems that perhaps Hannity isn't liking it. And I find out later, of course, that this was you. And Sean Hannity then called you a great American, which you put on your blog. In fact, I still have the little logo you made that just says, "I love J.M. Bell. He's a great American." But I was thinking about this, and this is the story I wanted to tell, because my introduction into following and covering politics began with just a personal desire. I was reading the newspapers, and I was getting sick of the syndicated columns that Utah's newspapers were constantly using, and how much
addicted,
misinformation.
Addicted to the AP.
Oh yeah, horrible, yeah. And there, it's the worst stuff. You're dumber for reading it most times, and that's originally why I decided I was going to set up a blog. And then quickly I met you and you know several others who many of whom aren't even around anymore in Utah politics, many who still are. And I was thinking about the trajectory of this. You know, it was sort of like it was a fun club to be a part of. We were all friends. We got some great experiences. We got to go to the DNC. You ran a chair campaign that most of us got involved in some way or another.
Sorry about that.
No, taught us all a lot about the party.
You can't trust a Mac. That's what it taught me.
It was his idea. He made us, anyone listening. It was so amazing to see that side of the party and to learn, you know, both the inner workings, good and ugly, of party politics. And I mean, what an experience. And then I was just thinking, you know, this year and last year, I worked closely with a couple of lawmakers, Republicans here in Utah, on some transparency bills. And I've made some friends at the Sunlight Foundation in Washington, D.C. that, you know, it's kind of become my latest focus is government transparency, but more specifically, how governments deal with data and how accessible they make it, but also how useful they make the data and how useful they could make the data, but usually aren't. So that's where my life has kind of gone personally. But I was thinking about the trajectory from here, from there, way back 2004-05, when I'm reading jmbell.org and laughing my ass off at most of the just this way you had of expressing something very complex, very simply, and usually hilariously. And, you know, I really, without this group of people that I first met, and without you and your energy for just always constantly having something going, somehow involved, somehow working on something. If you're in between ideas, there's always an idea coming down the pipeline. And that energy, I think, is... I mean, it really, there are a lot of us, I think, that have been drugged along that ride by people like you that have kind of kept that energy going. And it's definitely something I've been affected by. And so I think about, you know, mid-2000s, reading these blogs and getting involved, getting to know the players, getting to know the names, voicing my opinion, hearing others voice their opinions, and then to go from there to actually being invited, you know, into legislative circles to work on bills and help draft bills and help get bills passed in the other chamber if they're sponsored in the Senate, and you know, trying to citizen lobby the support of leadership in the Senate and the House, knowing these people personally, none of that would have happened if I hadn't run across jmbell.org literally about 10 years ago. And it's an amazing story. And
God, it has been a while.
Anyone listening to this, though, I mean, honestly, take that and run with it. Or don't read it and laugh. Sometimes it's more fun.
No, I remember. I mean, that was I got back to Utah in 2002, and so okay. Well, no, all right. So I got back, and one thing led to another, and the next thing you know, I just happened to be in a room with a congressional candidate when his staff quit. And they quit.
You're the only one that didn't walk out, right?
I just didn't give a shit. I wasn't working. I'd done politics, you know, in the past.
Good for video of that.
So yeah, and so they all just were like, "Well, we're leaving." And the truth is that it was a combination of a guy who should not have been running for that particular office because he really didn't have the time or the money. He was working three jobs, you know, teaching at two colleges and then working full time as a police chief. And, you know, he was too fucking busy for it. And sure. I liked him. I'd only met him once. And this was the second time was when everybody quit on him. And I liked him. And so he's looking around and he looks at me and he's like, well, shit, it's June.
Yeah.
What do I do? And I'm like, hell, I'll do it. Do you know how to do it? Yeah, kind of. I've done the communications part, the rest. How hard can it be? It was hard. And that was when I found out that you can't fire a volunteer no matter how much you want to. So I watched this guy get waffle stomped by his own party. I just watched them kick the shit out of him, treat him poorly, you know, in addition to all the other frustrations. And I got mad and opened my mouth to a reporter, which has become sort of a habit. And so I pissed off the party. Well, then this is Donald Dunn. I don't mind saying it. He made me mad. And I was like, hey, look, all we watched was party interference. We just watched these people just dick with this guy, and it's not cool. And he got mad. Why would you say such a thing? I'm like, well, kind of because it's true. And if you're going to behave that way, don't be surprised when people talk about it. You know?
Oh, sure.
That's just it. It's I will, and I think, you know, not to toot on this podcast, but one of the reasons why this feels natural to me is I like telling stories. And if you are going to be an asshole, then when I tell the story in which you and I interact, I am not going to butter you up because you made the decision to be a dick. So if I call you a dick, it's because you were a dick. And Donald Dunn was a dick. Now, on the other side, the guy is smart. He is one of the most naturally talented political fundraisers I've ever met, you know. And other than the fact that he's kind of a douche to me, there's nothing really wrong with him that no. I'd want to get into. And I'm terribly fond of his wife, whatever. So anyway, I was trying to make amends. And I don't want to tell the story of the meanest thing I ever did to the Democratic Party right now. But I kind of got involved with a candidate who turned out to be the biggest mistake of my entire fucking life. And you may know who I'm talking about. And he talked to Donald Dunn and was like, hey, you know, Jeff wants to make amends and he wants to fix this and that and the other. And he's like, well, if Bell ever wants to be involved with this party, he's going to have to get somebody elected, you know, to the executive committee. And I'm like, okay. And the biggest mistake I ever made was the guy I had handy. So I did it. I regret it. I regret the fuck out of it. But the next thing you know, it's 2005. I'm working for the party. I'm delighted. I started up the party's blog, much to the chagrin of the previous administration who had quit. I believe it was Lisa Alcott who called me a bozo.
Yes,
that
it was.
Didn't hurt because it was too shitty an insult. really a bozo? What is this, 1949?
At least put some creativity into it.
Yes, the part of my soul from the Eisenhower era is really in a weep right now. Yeah. Oh,
were
I just
you
remember.
Name?
Huh?
Didn't the Republican Party chairman call you names?
Jeff
or was
Hartley.
It just wrong?
Yeah, he hated my ass. And James, was it? No, it wasn't Evans. Who was the party chair? Their executive director and I used to fight all the time. Jeff Hartley. And I remember, sure.
Yeah,
Evans. Evans hated my guts. Yeah. And
Evans said some strange things in reaction to some of the things you put out.
Well, we were fighting. You had not seen a Utah Democratic Party with fight in it in a long time, and I remember sure. It was Dan. What's his name? He's the political editor over at the Salt Lake Tribune. Crap. And I should remember his name because I've pissed him off. Anyway, he sent me a letter, I think a month in. He's like, this is a really aggressive tone for Democrats. And I'm like, really? Because in other places I've worked, this is pretty tame. And he's like, no, this is you guys coming out swinging. And I remember talking to Wayne Holland about that and saying, do you mind? He's like, nope. I'm like, okay. You know, and ultimately that led to Matheson firing me because I kept stepping in the way of their bullets when they were trying to get mad at Wayne. But, yeah, so I went from there running their blog. And then when the Dems fired me, I'm sorry, when Matheson fired me, I'm sorry, when Doug Wright got me fired, whatever. another dumbass long story. I started jmbell.org. And the only reason I bought jmbell.org was because jeffbell.com was taken, jeffbell.org was taken, jmbell.com was taken. And I'm like, well, I might run for office someday. This is fair. I bought it. And I did. I've run for office twice now. So, yeah. Bleh, it's mine. Fuck off. And I have had people bust my balls about the ORG. They just, I don't care. I bought it. It's mine. Shut up.
They're so just jealous.
I did. I started that blog and went from the snarky guy I was working for the party to the ridiculously over-the-top, snarky, swearing asshole that I became. And then I started working for Salt Lake City Corporation as the senior advisor and special operations and programs guy for Rocky Anderson, which is how we got to Sean Hannity. So they had been, you have Rocky Anderson, and for all of my problems with Rocky as a person, Rocky the activist is a fucking national treasure, you know?
Yeah.
I've never figured out how a guy who so despises human beings could work so hard on behalf of humanity, you know?
That's, I could never make those two things be right in my head as well.
Well, I remember Todd and I stayed friends throughout. Even though he was very embarrassed the day he had to fire me because Wayne was too chicken shit. But he just, when I told him I was going to work for Rocky, he says, there's something you need to know before you go over there. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, the thing about Rocky is he's constantly wrong, but never uncertain.
Sure.
And the two things that I liked about Rocky were that he would not put anything out that he knew was untrue. That man meticulously researched the smallest, most minute pieces of information. And so even though he was an asshole of colossal proportions, everything he said was true. You know, you may not like his opinion, and a lot of people didn't, but he wasn't a liar. And I think you were the one, if I recall, it was either you or Ethan Millard that said, for all of Rocky's problems, you can't give the guy a fucking Diet Coke. He will not take anything from anybody. And so he and Hannity had gotten into a fight on Fox News about the Constitution. And one of the important things is that Rocky, as a lawyer and a constitutional scholar, pretty much knows the Constitution. Are you there?
I lost you for a second, but you're back.
Okay. So Rocky knows the Constitution, and Sean Hannity is a mentally challenged Irish dipshit who does not. So Rocky was on his show. They got in an argument.
This was in the midst of the, United States Attorney Generals.
Gonzalez.
Alberto Gonzalez, all of that.
Some things spying, like some torture, a lot of torture.
A lot of torture.
It was right after Abu Ghraib, as I recall.
I think so.
Yeah. And so, you know, Rocky got pissed and said stuff, and Hannity said stuff. And finally, like, Hannity's, all debate. I'll come out there on my own dime and debate. And, of course, it did end up costing the University of Utah like $40,000 to get him out. Plus, he got to use Huntsman's private jet, blah, blah, blah. we got Ken Verdoya. From KUTV, no, from KUED.
KUED, yeah.
To moderate the debate. And Ken did an okay job. He did an admirable job, considering. But sure. That day when you saw me arguing with Hannity, what had happened earlier in the day is we'd gone to check over the site and make sure everything was okay. I was with Patrick Thronson, and we were walking through sort of the stage and the layout and making sure everything was up and line of sight was. We were doing a tech check. I had been with Rocky's office for, I don't even think, a month. I think I'd been there about 2 weeks. And as we're walking in this darkened theater, as though from a cloud of brimstone smoke, steps from the dark recesses of a curtain next to a brick wall, I swear to God, Sean Hannity, who is not very big, I don't care what anybody says, he's a little feller compared to me, and he immediately, the first words out of his mouth to Thronson are, "Hey, look, it's Patrick the Liar." I like Patrick Thronson, so I'm immediately pissed. And I do that thing that I do when I get upset, especially back when I was thinner, where I just kind of come up on somebody and I get just an inch and a half into their personal space, and then I look down at them. And I was like, "What did you call him?" And he turns to me and shoots his hand out. And I, having been raised by a polite man who told me to be polite as long as you possibly can, shook the devil's hand.
Ah.
And he said, "I'm Sean Hannity." And I said, "I'm Jeff Bell." And he says, "Outstanding, Jeff Bell. You're a great American." And I said, "I can't take that with but a grain of salt coming from you." And he just went, "Oh, good, great, glad to hear it." And he turns back and he busts Patrick's balls a little more. And then, yeah, later that night when you saw us, I was doing the same thing. I was trying to explain to him that him calling me a great American was sort of an insult because his version of a great American was not anything I would ever want to be and didn't resemble my country at all. And I was doing it with a big smile on my face, and it was driving him fucking nuts because he couldn't escape me. So that was what you came into, was me giving Sean Hannity shit. But I did. I got back to the office later that afternoon, and I wrote the, "I just met the devil, and the devil gave me a compliment." And I had that picture.
Called you a great American.
Yeah, I had that picture of Hannity with his big dipshit smile, and I put a button on his lapel that said, "I love J.M. Bell." And then I do believe I sold stickers and T-shirts and mugs for a while, and a few people bought those. That was 2007, early 2007, April, I think.
I think that's when it really started to take off, and we learned, and this is just the funniest thing, and it's still, you know, you talk about the Left Show Twitter account, you talk about some of the response that you got as communications director, you know, putting out aggressive stuff. The Republicans and conservatives in Utah are so, they have spent so many decades in a silo of nodding and yes men responses to the most insane shit that they can't wrap their heads around a confident, outspoken, and most importantly, knowledgeable, progressive or liberal person calling them on it. They are shocked.
Well,
but what's fun about this is that they don't realize that we're beating them with Google. That's how we're making them look dumb or look misinformed, or sometimes even look like flat out liars. With Google, you Google something and you read and learn about it and you go, "Hey, that guy's full of shit." And then you go tell them they're full of shit. And they want.
Earlier today, let's throw this out as just an example of that. The House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. passed a bill written by Rob Bishop to take away presidential authority to protect wilderness lands, unique landscapes, ecosystems, etc., right?
Yes.
And what the big argument is, and I've kind of watched you do this on the Twitter as well, is that we bring into Utah what I call free money, over $20 billion a year of free money comes into Utah from people from other states and countries. They come here, they visit, they buy our shit, they eat our food, they look at our pretty stuff, and then they fucking leave. And the thing they don't take with them is their money. $21 billion plus a year. And what folks here want to do, the Republican majority want to do, is take all these pretty places that these people bring their free-ass money and sell them out to developers, miners, mineral interests, etc., which degrades the value of those in if in no other way, to remove all the hippie Earth Mother shit out of it, it makes them not pretty anymore. And if they're not pretty anymore, people are going to take that fucking money to Arizona, and they're going to take it to the Grand Canyon, and they're going to take it to Nevada, and they're going to take it to Oregon, and they're going to take their free money somewhere else for a one-time payment on mineral rights. And these assholes, they've been doing it since Chris Cannon. They've been doing it since before Chris Cannon. They're like, well, the federal government owes us money, so that we will give it to the schools. You bet. Okay. One-time money versus billions of dollars a year coming in, you know.
Absolutely. So, and you add to this the fact that here in Utah, for every $1 that we contribute to the national pot, if you will, in taxpayer money, Utah takes $1.74 back.
Yeah.
And so every time you hear a lawmaker say, you know, the federal government should balance its budget like we do here in Utah, just remember that the only way we're able to balance our budget here in Utah is thanks to a shitload of federal money.
Yeah.
And it's one of the ironies of conservative messaging that I don't know if they believe this and they know in the back of their heads that they're full of it. I don't know if they know the whole time that it's just a great line that people buy, or if they actually believe it, that somehow Utah is this island that, you know, could exist and maintain itself on its own, with no help from, you know, no need to be a part of a union. No, I mean, it's the biggest crock. Utah is a state that's the perfect example of a state that would not exist and couldn't self-sustain if we weren't mooching off of a larger pot.
Well, when you go back to when you and I were first tooling around together, no, I think they knew they were full of shit. I think they knew that they were lying, and I think they knew that their electorate was ignorant and lazy and didn't give a shit and went, well, if a Republican said it, God wants me to vote that way anyway. And so they would go ahead and do it. What finally frightened me...
Democrats are all nice to the gays and stuff.
Oh, I know. God damn it. And so, but what finally has become a little frightening and has made me go, oh, I probably need to move my children somewhere else before they get too much older, is, you know, the new T-Publican crowd that does believe it. That looks at the fact of math and goes, because I don't like that fact, it's not true. Because I don't like science, or I'm too dumb. I'll go with Mike Lee. I'm too dumb to understand science. And Jason Chaffetz, dumb. And Rob Bishop, dumb. I don't know about Chris Stewart. He just seems like kind of a shithead. I don't know if he's dumb. He's just kind of an asshole.
He's dumb and weird at the same time.
Okay, I'll go with that. They look at solid fucking fact and they go, nah, I don't like it, so it's not true. And their lazy, fat, dipshit electorate goes, okay.
It's skewing the polls. You remember in 2012 there was the skewed polls guy that, despite the fact that every poll averaging numbers cruncher out there was saying Romney is going to lose his ass. Yep. You had this guy, this guy that claims to be a data geek, much like Utah's representative David Lifferth, who claims to be a data geek but seems to be one of the most numerically challenged people I've ever seen. They wanted to believe it, so they bought it, and so skewed polls became a thing for a couple of weeks, and then of course the election happened and it turns out the polls weren't skewed. They were actually pretty accurate and Mitt Romney lost his ass.
What was her name? Megyn Kelly?
They're skewing the world.
Yeah,
they skew climate science. They skew one of the latest things you'll hear from conservatives on climate science is that scientists just publish papers that say client that there is such a thing as global warming and there is such a thing as extreme climate change that's happening because of man, they're just publishing those papers so they can get grant money, which is not at all how the granting process works. It's a process that's impossible to game. But yet there are thousands of people who believe that and repeat it. They're literally trying to skew the world because, as the joke used to go back when you and I started all of this in the mid-2000s, the joke at the time was that reality has a liberal bias.
Yes.
And on everything from gay marriage to climate change to state issues like public lands, reality actually does have a bias. Public lands, for example, here in Utah, the only way Representative Ken Ivory's big crusade to reclaim our public lands from the union we apparently don't need to be a part of anymore because we're Utah and Tea Party and stuff. It's the only way you could make his plan successful is if you auctioned off these public lands to the highest bidder with the deepest oil well drills. That's it. That is the only way to do it. But talk to them about it. And no, we won't have to do that. Oh, yeah. How else are you going to make money off of these lands to pay for the kids?
Reasons.
Exactly.
Well, wishes.
Yeah. skewed polls.
But that is it. And it's, you know, if you sit down and you talk to some of the more reasonable Republicans that are not as brain fevered as the new Tea Party weirdos, and you say something as easy as, look, it's like this, and I'll go back to free money for a second, blah blah blah, billions of dollars come in, we get to keep all of our pretty parts, and then these people leave and their money stays, or we can sell off the land for a one-time payment, at which point every single piece of profit that comes out of what used to be our pretty places is then shipped to other states, to other countries, to offshore accounts. There is no financial benefit in the long run. And in the short run, the financial benefit is only going to benefit 10 people, maybe 20, and they'll believe with an intensity that maybe, just maybe, if they vote hard enough, they could be one of those 20. And so they keep voting like assholes.
Sure.
You know, it's the Republican Tinkerbell problem.
Meanwhile, we could just acknowledge that Utah can't afford to manage these public lands. That's why this fight hasn't happened before. And and that, you know, government costs money and people like, whether they admit it or not, like their services. And so, I mean, that's the funniest thing that's coming down the pike is you're going to see states, Utah, for example, will have to address this flat tax BS. They'll have to at a certain point, and it's going to end up being a tax hike. But there's no other way to continue to pay for even the most basic level of services we have here in Utah from our government unless that happens.
So, okay, I want to tell a story.
Okay.
Okay. I had just, you'll like this story, because since you told a story about me, I got to tell a story about you.
Uh-oh.
I had just gotten hired as weekend talent at KSL Radio. And I had my own show.
Left of the Dial. I remember.
And my first show, I walked in with about 180 pieces of paper. All about what really shitty politicians, Huntsman and Shurtleff were.
We should point out that all of these pieces of paper were paid for out of your own pocket.
Yeah.
Unlike the Attorney General at the time.
Yeah. So
I guess we're jumping ahead to how your show ended there, right?
Yeah, no doubt. So I go and I talk about Huntsman being a schmuck for about 5 minutes of this show. Because he was. I don't understand the hero worship with John Huntsman at all. Yeah, he's nice and he's short and he plays some instrument or another. Was he a drummer or a keyboard?
I want to say bass, but maybe it's keyboard.
Yeah, whatever. So it's not a manly instrument. Then I go into Shurtleff, and at that time I had collected works from the Tribune, the AP, the Deseret News, and just kind of lit off after Mark. And I had an awful lot of ammunition, all published, And so I did that for, now, keeping in mind commercial radio, at least on the scale of KSL, that's that big. In every hour of show, there's maybe 27 to 33 minutes of actual show. The rest is commercials, weather, and traffic. So I gave Mark 25 minutes of my of that time.
Sure.
And thought nothing of it. Now, show number two was you and I had worked that out to get you. And did Craig come down with you?
I think he might have. It seems like there was someone else there, though.
I think it was Craig. To get you guys on the show to talk about technology in politics. We had worked throughout the week, you and I, on talking points, what we wanted to cover, what we wanted to go over, how we wanted the show to go. And because, again, I was brand new. I will tell you in a minute how I ended up doing that show. So you drive, what, 4 hours, 8 hours, 2 hours? I don't remember. You drive down from the north end of the state to be on the show. And 10 minutes before the show's about to start, I get a call from the programming director, says the attorney general's mad at you and wants on the show today to refute your claims from last week. And I said, naively, no. No, I got a guy down from northern Utah. We got a thing. We're going to talk about the stuff and the bits and the stuff. And he's like, oh, I don't think you understand. He's there. And he's going on your show, and you're going to talk to him, and you're going to be nice to him. Like, well, shit. Okay. So I get up there, and Mark Shurtleff limps into the room wearing the loudest Hawaiian shirt I've ever seen in my life, and I will freely admit that I would love to own it, and carrying a gun and a small notebook. And he brandishes his weapon at me, the shirt, and... you know, and keeps showing me his gun. And then he sits down. And according to everything that's come out over the last few months, lied straight to my face about allegations of impropriety in his attorney general's office. Lied to my face with an angry tone and a brandished weapon and an ugly shirt. To which I believe I fought back with the phrase, well... maybe you should quit falling off your motorcycle. Because, you know.
What advice for him?
I don't fall off my motorcycle, and you keep falling off yours. So, yeah, and that was, I kind of figured out what my gig at KSL was. Later, and not much later, basically what I would do was listen to the lady who was on before me. And anything she said that pissed me off became what I talked about on my show. And
we should point out too, the person on before you is possibly one of the angriest, meanest people in Utah.
Well, it was
politics.
Former Representative Enid Green.
Just an
something.
Angry, angry person.
She was a lady who, when it turned out that her dad and her former husband had somehow managed to accidentally infuse her congressional campaign with over $1 million, held a 2.5 hour press conference and took no questions. 2.5 hour press conference, took no questions.
It was brilliant, actually, in hindsight. But at the time, most of us were going, what?
Yeah. And so... and that was another thing, speaking of Todd, that Todd always talked about, is he's like, I know what happened. Half of us that were around knew what happened. But then she threw that damn press conference and nobody wanted to talk to her anymore.
Oh, it was effective.
Yeah, it was. So, I don't know. And then, yeah, later, was it 2 years later, when they finally got rid of me, we had a Utah senator, I believe, who was responsible for some of the most ridiculous, heavy-handed, religion-based alcohol policy, or as people outside of Utah know it, Utah's stupid liquor laws, gets caught on a DUI.
Yeah.
And I had a show. I had been bumped several weeks in a row due to BYU sports. and I come on, and that happens, and I talk about the hypocritical nature of the Utah GOP, blah, blah, blah. And I wasn't out of line, and I didn't say anything untrue. I just swung for the fences, and I got a warning call later the next week. You know, hey, you can't be that big a dick. You know, try it with a smile. whatever. I was smiling. I laughed the whole time. So then I have the next 2 weeks off. Because of more sports. And then as I come back, it was right when a Utah House rep, also a guy who had cloaked himself in the morality of religion, of the predominant Mormon religion, I'm a super Mormon, turns out that he'd been hot tubbing with a 15-year-old. He was her Sunday school teacher. She was his babysitter. And he had paid her and the family over $150,000 in hush money and had gotten himself elected to the Utah House and was running around running morality bills. And the girl who, bless her heart, had already spent the hush money was like, well, screw it. He can't take what I don't have. Hey, that asshole molested me in a hot tub. And I lost my mind a little bit. And I remember...
standing ovation for admitting it.
I know. So, yeah, and that was the thing, is he admits it on the last day as he quits. And he gets a standing ovation from the entire Republican caucus. Thank God for once that the Democratic caucus, however small it was at the time, twice as big as it is now, by the way, had the wherewithal to sit the fuck down and not clap for the child molester.
Sure.
So the next I go on the, I think, what is it? Session ends on Thursday night. I went on Saturday and I got a call from the program director saying, hey, I know what you want to do. Could you please talk about something else? And I said, no. And he said, okay, if you have to talk about it, can it just be part of your show? And I'm like, it'll be part of my show. He's like, okay. And just try and treat it, you know, seriously and with a tiny bit of respect. And I said, I'll see what I can do. I was lying. Flat fucking out, I was lying. And so I started to talk about it. And every time I mentioned the fact that he got a standing ovation, my producer would play at my request a sound clip from the nearest at that point World Cup soccer match. 70,000 wild soccer fans screaming, clapping, and singing ole, 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 ole. I went nuts. I went after him. I went after the hypocritical nature of who he was and how he behaved. I went after the GOP caucus, all of that. And I knew walking out the door that I was done. And I got the call on my drive home saying, you know, we've decided to go another direction. And that's when they gave my show to Charlie Luke, who's now a Salt Lake City councilman, who, as much as I love Charlie, was boring as shit and therefore perfect for that idiot station. So, yeah, I knew I was gone. Now, I come to find out later, a year later, that the reason they were looking for a reason to can me was because a year earlier I had written a blog here we go about the GOP institutional fear of the vagina, and I used the word vagina in place of women's health care because it's funny and it gets the point across. I think saying with your thing is it's like sometimes you can take a point and make your point, and sometimes you can make your point with a fucking hammer. I prefer the hammer.
Sure.
But I have painted a smiley face on it so no one gets the wrong idea. And so I did. It was like the whole article was just vagina, 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 vagina. I don't know what their problem with the vagina is. I love the vagina. It's one of my favorite things in the world. Vagina, vagina, vagina. And Rob Miller's little Republican pet who had worked for Jacobs. You remember him? Brian?
Yes.
Brian sent snotty letters to KSL management, signed his name talking about how how bad Bell was and how stupid Bell was and how vulgar Bell was. Look at these blog posts. You know who would be much better, said Brian, concerned citizen, is Rob Miller, the vice chair of the party. Wouldn't he be wonderful on the show? And the thing that when Rob and Brian cooked this up that they didn't know was Rob had done a little bit of radio, I don't know if you remember, on K-Talk with Xavier months before, I think in 2006, and it was the biggest, loudest, noisiest, dipshittiest train wreck of all time. And they had heard it, and they were one of the reasons it took them almost a year to get around to offering me the Weekend Post, was because they were afraid if they stuck a Democrat in their studio, it would turn out like that train wreck. So here you've got Brian sending email after email like this. Rob Miller's the greatest. Rob Miller's the best. Oh, wouldn't he be fantastic? It's like, oh my God. Okay. And so, you know, it was like half a headache and half vagina. They're like, whatever. I did 3 years there, which was the fulfillment of a childhood dream. I liked KSL when I was a kid, wanted to be on their air, got on their air, and realized that the shit you want when you're a kid, you're too dumb to know, is going to suck when you get it.
Well, and you couldn't have foreseen the, which is still, if you get the broadcaster rankings in Utah for KSL radio, and if you watch what passes for the evening news on KSL these days, you couldn't have foreseen your tenure coincided with this, and I still get told this was never an official internal policy, although everyone I've spoken with...
Yes, it was. It was hung on the wall.
We all know it was. And you joked about it. You said, you know, say it with a smile, but it's really, you know, it's this idea that keeping everybody happy... I mean, if you want to talk about Orwellian, talk about news organization, the predominant news organization in the state when it comes to television and radio, at least... and now, well, let's not say in news because newsprint because, you know, Deseret News is their newsprint wing. So you have this conglomerate who is concerned about informing people of the big stories of the day or adding context to those stories. They're more concerned in making sure that when everyone finishes a program on their show, perhaps hosted by a person named Doug, or when someone finishes evening news at 10:30 at night, that they shut off their TV or their radio with a smile on their face and warm, fuzzy feeling in their belly and, you know, images of Care Bears dancing through their head. That is the goal and the internal purpose, as has been stated, at least according to employees I've spoken to.
Yeah.
Of a very large news organization, and you see this. You mentioned Charlie, and nice guy,
very nice guy,
smart, wicked smart politician. But the reason he worked, is he is not saying anything. He's a Democrat that probably doesn't threaten Republicans. Mornings they have a Republican that is considered edgy because occasionally he's not insane like the Tea Party, and yet this is what a huge number of people, this is where they get their news all day long. It makes me sympathize with a couple of evening show hosts that I happen to like.
No, I know what you're talking about, because one of them used to be, I think...
The one they're currently doing.
Yeah.
They have to skip to doing a much better show than the one they're currently doing.
Yeah. Hey, you are starting to break up pretty bad.
Okay.
And we've now crossed over at an hour.
Sunspots.
Yeah, definitely. So what I want to say now, and then I'm going to stop recording and then we'll talk for a minute, but I wanted to say, one, thank you for your time and consideration. We will definitely do this again because I like talking to you.
For sure.
And this has got to be easier for you than sitting down to record a sidetrack for the show. And
engaging.
I'm going to go ahead and just pretend that the conversation you and I had earlier this week about you coming at things from a far more positive direction, looking for action as opposed to reaction, is going to happen. Sure. And that people who do listen to The Left Show, as soon as Jason figures out a little bit more how to be positive, I think you guys are going to hear some really impressive shit from him. So stay tuned. So thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That's it for this show.